Radio Catskill.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Local Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Thank you for joining me on this Friday evening. In the second half of the show, we'll find out more information on MLK celebration that's happening at the First Baptist Church in South Fallsburg. It's happening on Monday at 4 p.m. We'll find out more information later on in the show. But first, it's Friday on the Local Edition, and every Friday we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Schwanker Journal. Chris, welcome back to the program. One of the stories, the big stories that came out of Ulster County and Ellenville this week was the fire at the Neville. Another fire that happened at the Neville. The fire happened last weekend, and multiple fire agencies came to put out the fire. But you came on to the show on Monday, gave us a small update. I just want to know, do you have any more information on the fire, the cause of the fire, and sort of what's going to be sort of the next steps for the Neville?
No, I haven't heard anything more since then. You know, this was, as was visible in pictures and everything, it was quite a serious fire, destroyed the main entrance area, but it didn't. Apparently, there was some confusion. At first, it was thought that it didn't spread. Then it was thought that it had spread to other parts of the complex, and it may have done, but it doesn't seem to have destroyed other parts. However, at this point, I know that the Keith Rubenstein, who's the kind of point man for Arrowhead LLC, which is the LLC set up by Somerset Partners to manage this construction of everything, will presumably be accelerating efforts to demolish and remove, all the buildings of the old Neville, because, you know, can't have this going on. This is the second fire there inside a year. And with that, I'd just like to say, you know, a really huge thank you to the firefighters from Ellenville, of course, right, but also Napanock and Cohonkson, and also Summitville. And firefighters came over from Walker Valley and came down from Cragsmore. So, you know, it's like a whole area, fire companies come together with something like this. And that is kind of, you know, reassuring that we have that capacity. But also it's a demand on them. And, you know, they risk their lives, you know, every time they're doing one of these things. So I'm always conscious of that when I hear the siren go off in Cragsmore, you know. So that was that. Anyway, then moving quickly to the other side, to the next element, that would be water. There was an important presentation at Ellenville Village Board of Trustees meeting on Monday from Delaware Engineering, who are probably the acme of regional engineering companies. And Mary Beth Bianconi, who's a partner of Delaware, was kind of running the thing. Anyway, basically what they're doing, they have secured about $6 million in grants and low cost borrowing to kickstart the repair refurbishment of the village sewer department sewer plant, which is now, hang on, let me think, it's more than 10 years old. I think it's 12 years old, and this is one of these issues that all of our little communities have to consider. You build a sewer plant, but you only build one. What you really need is two, because you can't shut the one down to redo things. Difficult there, because they're so expensive. Anyway, this one's been running for like 12 years nonstop, and everything wears out. It goes 24/7, 364 days a year. Something pushed to that level will run out, especially when there's a lot of moving pieces. So the village is, you know, desperately working to get that fixed and repaired before they begin to get those ominous notices from NYSDEC about, you know, you are polluting the stream. You're not allowed to pollute streams anymore at all. So, you know, the village is working hard to get that done. It will cost a lot of money, and they have, through Delaware and the work of Mark Blauer, the fantastic grant writer that has helped Wawarsing so much and now is helping Ellenville, they've managed to get some grants, about $6 million together, grants and low cost borrowing. So that's that side. But on the other side, the village, the water supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, I mean, there's about 25 miles of pipes in the water supply village in the village of Allenville. And Fred Ward is trying to, the village manager for the water supply, is building a map. There is no map. This thing has, you know, it's as unknown as the tunnels in the Matrix. No one really knows where some of these things go, you know. So they're mapping it, but they basically need a serious work on supply. They have two wells. They're good wells, you know, but it has been noted that they have some issues. They have an issue with a pair of tanks, water tanks, that, you know, should stay in balance. As you fill one, you drain the other, but they stay in balance. Well, one of them is filling, the other is draining, and draining too much. So that there's work to be done there. But mostly they need to consider how to get a third well, or perhaps if they can get the money, to bring back the water system they had on the mountain, bringing water from Lake Maratanza down through a filtration plant. It had to be filtered because it's, you know, out in the wild, and yeah, it has, what are they called? What are the awful little single cell protist? I can't remember.
Amoebas?
Beaver fever. Anyway, you have to filter it, but that was a really good third supply. Yeah. But they lost that due to hurricane stroke tropical storm Irene back in 2009, and have not been able to replace it. So these are the issues they're looking at, and you know, they will see, you know, what can be done and what grant money they can reach, and it's competitive grant money. And the thing that is most perhaps interesting immediately is that this is the final year of the money coming from the American Rescue Plan. If you can remember that, the beginning of Mr. Biden's presidency, when things were in pretty dire shape due to COVID, they put through the American Rescue Plan and pulled up about $1 trillion and put it out there to everybody. Well, this is the fifth year. This is the last year you can apply. So Bianconi and her team are hoping to get their application in. The final date will be May the 30th. If they can get an application in, then they'll have a good shot. The reason they have a good shot is that, like Wawarsing and some of our other areas and other districts, has, you know, ticks a lot of boxes in terms of, you know, having lower than average incomes, you know, degree of poverty, and so on and so on, makes them more likely to score, to get one of these grants. So anyway, that's where that's at. The mayor and the board of trustees basically just sort of watching this and, you know, and hoping that it works. And I think it will, but you know, it's going to be necessary.
Yeah.
Because for instance, the Neverly, when the Neverly comes back on, the Neverly project, they plan to be in the water district, so they're going to put a, you know, pretty reasonable demand on a water district that should be able to cope with it, but can it? You know, there's these questions that have to be answered.
It's definitely an issue that we have in a lot of towns and villages as the population grows, and it's a question whether the current infrastructure there is there can't handle future growth. And a lot of towns and villages know that this is not possible. I say, for example, the town of Fallsburg is in works now of upgrading their system because of the recent growth and the ongoing growth that is happening in Fallsburg. You know, it's something we're facing with an aging infrastructure. Chris, what else do you have us for on the Schwunker Journal? You have some update on the dog park that's coming to Allenville.
There was a nice presentation from Eleanor Santagard, who is on the Parks and Recreation Commission for the village and the town, on dog park. The dog park is progressing. The focus has moved from an area over at the edge of the town on the northern side back to Boom Road Park on the upper area at the back, which is a good place for it. There's room there to expand out to get to you easily to use about 10,000 square feet for two fenced areas, one for big dogs, one for small dogs. The fencing, this was smart. They saved the fencing that came down from the basketball courts and tennis courts not too long ago, when all that was replaced. So they've got a whole bunch of chain link fencing that they can use, and that is very expensive stuff these days. So, you know, those little sort of things help. And this dog park will be well away from the children's playground, and will serve to mitigate some issues that we have at the moment in the village, which is that owners are basically, you know, there is nowhere in the town we're working to let a dog off a leash, not legally. And this is true in a lot of our towns. Anyway, but so owners often let their dog off leash unlawfully if they think it's safe. And what they think is safe may not be what some family over there thinks is safe. You know, so it's much better to have dogs off leash, and especially in a dog park where they can meet other dogs, which they love. I mean, dogs really, really light up when they can meet a whole bunch of other dogs and make a temporary pack and run around and, you know, play and the rest of it. It's very cute to see. They get a real charge out of it. Anyway, so this will take a lot of the pressure off the village in terms of dogs being off leash anywhere, especially in places like, say, the softball field. Well, we don't want people letting their dogs run loose on the softball field because they don't clear up after their dogs afterwards, which is really not nice and is kind of a, you know, that's not an offering you want to leave for the girls on the village, I mean, on the school varsity softball team or for the softball club. So it was a nice presentation. We have to hope that things will move forward there. There's a number of things that have to be, some boxes that have to be ticked and so on. But, you know, I think it will prove the key thing is that the financing, the money raised to be raised to do it, to implement it, and then the money to keep it going and maintain it and clean it and everything will be run by COFFEE. That's the Citizens of Forward Facing Ellenville group, which has become such a vigorous and invigorating group in the village of Ellenville. And if they're going to take that on, then the village board doesn't really have to worry too much about the cost. And I don't think COFFEE is going away. I think they're going to be a fairly strong component of the community for quite a while. So anyway, that was a fun, slightly lighter. And I should also point out that COFFEE, they're not just doing it for dogs. they've actually secured a $15,000 grant to plan and implement a youth center. And that grant could lead to much more money to actually build and set up a youth center and perhaps bring in, I don't know, could be Boys and Girls Club, it could be YMCA, whoever, to run and operate it. But the end result is COFFEE is, you know, moving that ball along. And, you know, so it's they're a serious group, really, really getting down to getting things done in the village.
Yeah.
So that was good. And then I guess finally, the Ulster County Legislature had their organization meeting on Tuesday, and some people from Dairyland up in that far, what do we call it, northwest corner of Ulster County, southwest corner of Ulster County, showed up to basically, you know, seek assistance in resisting the UCRRA and their plan to put a landfill into that corner of the county. And everybody, you know, had their well-rehearsed arguments by this point, and they spoke well. And you could see that members of the legislature were sympathetic. But, of course, the UCRRA is not part of the county. It's not part of county administration. It is a different entity altogether has to make its own money. It's a semi-commercial operation, and it was put in. It was brought into existence, I believe, in the late 80s or the early 90s, simply because the politicians could not agree about how to do anything. So the way out of that was to say, well, we're not going to deal with this anymore. We're going to put it over there to them. And that's why it exists and what its job is. Anyway, you know, that organization is looking at everything in this as well, but must continue with their concept because they have a 10-year window. It's going to take at least 10 years to get a a landfill permitted and granted and set up. But the one thing that has changed, which probably benefits the people resisting this quite a lot, is that Mark Ryder, which, the CEO of the UCRRA, told me that quite definitely that NYSDEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, will not permit a landfill, that is, give a permit to a landfill that is on land taken by eminent domain. So I don't know quite what that does to the whole thing, but we will find out, you know, because they're going forward. Their engineers will be exploring properties up there, much to their owners' distaste, but they have the right to do that.
Yeah.
And then we'll see, you know, if the negotiations begin. Meanwhile, you know, other counties are in a similar set of issues, and everyone is looking over to Seneca Falls, the Seneca Meadows, the giant landfill that's been taking all this area's waste for years, to see what happens there. And I haven't spoken to contacts there recently, although I really should, and I should get back on the phone for them. But the last time I spoke to the Democrats there, they were adamant that as soon as they got power back, they were closing it.
Yeah,
I don't know if they can actually do that, but that was their confident kind of thought, you know.
Right.
So I guess we'll see, you know.
Yeah. It's a growing issue. Like, you know, we're all dealing with the landfills that are going out of commission, and trying to find ways to sort of move forward and still be, you know, environmental conscious.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a landfill is always going to have the problem and the fear of leaks.
Yeah.
You have a liner and everything, you know, but will the liner hold up for all 50 years that you plan to use the thing? But you've got to have something.
Yeah.
And at the other end of it, you know, every time I bring this one up with anybody, they just shrug. But, you know, why is it that our food and other industries just get away with plastic, everything plastic? Why?
Yeah.
I mean, why do we have everything made of plastic? You know, couldn't we have some laws that say, no, not plastic? You know, go back to refillable glass bottles for, you know, milk and everything. Oh, okay, it's a bother. You have to keep them and return them and so on. Yeah, but it means that you know, the plastic that we're constantly, you know, using and throwing out there wouldn't be there. But yeah. Of course,
I believe it's just difficult because we're so ingrained. I mean, just think about how much plastic is in our lives. You know, I'm just looking at what I'm looking at now, my board, my computer, everything, my pen, everything has plastic in it.
Everything. Yeah, I know. I mean, and some things I can see, you know, I mean, pens, yeah. And, you know, computer items, yes. And computer shells and cases, I can see that. But not everything. But, you know, it's an active and aggressive industry. And, of course, it's an arm of the petrochemical industry, which has had its way with, you know, our legislatures, national legislatures, you know, since what was the name of that gusher? Spindletop. Since, I don't know, the 1920s, you know, and the civilization has been fueled on oil, and still is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the changeover to renewables is essential. But of course, you know, when you create solar panels, you know, you're generating waste. When you create wind turbines, you know, some of them are now 650 feet tall. You're also creating waste, and you're burning a lot of material to melt the steel to make them. But ultimately, that's the only way we can go, that or nuclear fusion. And, you know, I know that things are moving slowly and steadily in that direction, but, you know, it's not going to be happening in my lifetime, although it ought to have.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if we were moonshotting, we would have nuclear fusion by now, I think. But anyway. That's you know, that's beside the point right now. And we gotta, you know, look at this landfill, see what can be done and what can be done to reduce the waste stream, cut it down. Yeah.
Thank you, Chris, for that. Chris Rowley from the Shawangunk Journal. We'll be right back. We'll find that information about the Sullivan County's NAACP's event that's happening on Monday, celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Ask someone that is undocumented in this country for more than 2 decades. No. Trying to do the right thing, paying taxes, working, raising my kids, and then someone come and, you know, threatening people like me, families that can be separated.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
I have a dream that my 4 little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin.
But welcome back to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. This Monday, the Sullivan County branch of the NAACP is in partnership with the First Baptist Church of South Fallsburg. They will gather in fellowship to commemorate the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King. This is happening at 4 p.m. The event will host a number of speakers, members from the NAACP, church leaders, and some county officials. On the phone with us now to tell us more about the event and the legacy of Dr. King is Ann Green, Joyce Burnett from the NAACP. Welcome to the show. Let's first start off with just introducing yourself, and then we can start talking about the event that's happening on Monday at 4 p.m.
My name is Annie Green.
And I'm George Burnett, a member of the Sullivan County NAACP.
So welcome both to the program this Monday, January 20th, First Baptist Church of South Fallsburg. Let's talk about the event. I see you in the press release that was you have a number of speakers coming up for that day. Just want to give folks an outlook and see what they can expect and why they should be attending this event.
Well, we have several people that's going to be speaking. Maud Bruce from the Ellenville NAACP. She's the president. She's going to be one of the greeters. Also, Alvin Dumas, who's one of the historians of Sullivan County, he's also going to be greeting. We have a couple of the singers, soloists that goes around singing at the various churches. We're going to have a sermon by the pastor of First Baptist of South Fallsburg, whose name is Reverend Paul L. Weathers. We're going to be recognizing the clergy and the elected officials. We will be having remarks from the president of the Sullivan County NAACP, David Jets.
And so this is happening on Monday, January 20th. Starts at 4 p.m. At the First Baptist Church of South Fallsburg. You know, it's such an important thing to celebrate the legacy of Dr. King. And I want to see, in your words, why is it important to sort of commemorate the life and the work of Dr. King?
Well, Dr. King fought very hard for the rights of not only Blacks, but the rights of human beings. He was an advocate for equality, justice, and he wanted that not only for one person, but he wanted it for all people. And it was his dream that we all could, as we would just say, get along, that we all would have the same equality. We would all have the same rights, no matter what your color was, no matter what your religious background was, that all men should be created equal. And I think that as the younger people are not hearing about that, they need to be reminded. It's something that we should never forget. And that's our theme. Let us never forget the dream.
Do you feel that Dr. King's dream will ever be fulfilled?
Well, for some of us that are older, I was born in 1948 and I was raised in the South. I went to an all-Black school, not because necessarily that I wanted to, but that's just the way it was then. You had what they would call colored schools and the white schools. But the dream of Dr. King was that we all would be treated equal. And in that being said, today, our children do not know, some of them are not even being taught the dream that Dr. King had. They're not even being taught who he really was. He was more so than just a black preacher, but he was an advocate for all men, all women. He was an advocate for justice, and he definitely stood that all men should be treated equal. And I just feel that as these kind of events should be held so that we won't forget. You said your daughter is 5 years old. And she's learning this. But if nobody teaches her, if we just let it go, and she would think that that's the way it was always. But somebody my age know better.
I mean, this, when Dr. King made that speech, you know, that wasn't that long ago. In the scope of things, that wasn't that long ago. And it's amazing how things have changed and how things sort of stayed the same in a way.
Yes. I remember as a young woman when my father went to vote. And that even to this day, I can remember the day that my dad and two of my older brothers went for my father to vote. That will always be in my head. If it had not been for the fight, if it had not been for the marches, if it had not been for people like Dr. Martin Luther King, I don't know if that would have happened. And these are memories that I have. These are memories that I tell my children. These are memories that I tell my grandchildren. So on election day, they get the lecture on, I remember when your great grandfather went to vote for the first time. And I still take pride in that.
I think some folks might take it for granted, the right to have the right to vote. It's something I personally always remind myself, and the reason why I do vote is that there was folks before me who fought for that right. There was folks not too long ago didn't have the right to vote because of the color of their skin. And this was such an important thing to fight for, to have a say in what happens in America's politics. The event's called Let Us Never Forget the Dream. That's happening on Monday. You said you went to school to an all-black school that was segregated down in the South. When things were changing, things sort of would change, become desegregated. How was that experience for you?
Some of us was ready for the change. Some of us wasn't ready for the change, because that is a big change. We saw on TV how some of the other schools in the state were, they had already said, okay, you can go to school there, and how they was treated. Some of it was fearful. But then some of us just bit the bullet and said, we're going to go. I, fortunately or unfortunately, wasn't one of those persons. I graduated from an all-black small school, but there was a plus to going to an all-black school. The plus to me was because all of my teachers were black, everybody that worked in the school was black, and they were able to teach us things that the things that my teacher said to me when I was a kid, if the teacher said that to the children today, they would be instantly fired. But during that time, they were able to teach us grow up to be a man. They were able to teach us that our rights and how to carry ourselves. So it was a plus, but then it was a negative. The negative part of us not being able to go to school, we weren't integrated, I should say, was because we had inferior books. We didn't get new books. We got passed down books from the white school. And every now and then I can remember that we would get a new book, and everybody would be so excited that we got a book that you were able to write your name in the book as the first person. But all of that had to do with the dream.
Annie and Joyce, I do appreciate you telling me about your thoughts on this upcoming holiday that we have here for Dr. Martin Luther King Day, and the event that you're having on Monday, which starts again at 4 o'clock at the First Baptist Church in South Fallsburg.
It was very nice talking with you.
And that does it for the local edition. Also, Monday, we will have special programming at 10 o'clock on Radio Chatskill. We'll bring you WNYC's annual MLK Day special with the Apollo Theater. That starts at 10 on Radio Chatskill. On the local edition, we'll have reaction to the inauguration, but also we'll have more of this conversation, my conversation with Annie and Joyce on Dr. King's legacy. Everyone stay safe this weekend. Take care. Lucy, have a good night. I'll talk to everyone next week. Bye-bye.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill.